Business Matters is proudly sponsored by Prince of Plays Frosses. With 21 years in business, Prince of Plays provides managed print solutions with local support and remote ink monitoring, saving your business time and money. Prince of Plays, your local printer and photocopier company.
Hello and welcome along to this week's Business Matters on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. Coming up later in the programme, I'll be finding out all about the Northern and Western Regional Assembly County Data Dashboard, which was launched recently. It's full of information about all eight counties in the Northern and Western region, including Donegal, and provides a very easy to navigate and visually friendly way of getting updated economic and social data. It really is a mine of information and contains everything from facts on infrastructure to population, mobility, and even credit card spending habits. I'll be hearing from John Daly, economist at the Northern and Western Regional Assembly. Before that, however, my main focus of attention in this edition is Bert Galbraith of Galbraith Construction. His company's work includes new builds, house renovations, energy upgrades, disability adaptations, and much more. The St. Johnston-based firm has been in business for over 20 years and has built up a trusted reputation for building excellence. Well, Bert joined me in studio to tell me more about his own background, how he got into business, how it's evolved over the last couple of decades, and indeed the changing nature of the construction sector, including the growing influence of AI.
Thank you very much for having us on this evening, Chris, and Galbraith Construction does works in a few sectors. We do disability adaptions and be it the shower, be it the ramp, be door widening to help people stay in their home a little bit longer, make it a little bit easier for themselves and for their carers. We also do new builds. We have our own team, so we sort of manage it the whole way through. From the build right through to the client moving into it. And over the last number of years, we've worked along with the council a lot and doing their voids, their vacant houses, their energy upgrades. We do some of the energy upgrades as well, be it the windows, the heating upgrades, the heat pumps. And I suppose over the next few years, we'll be doing more so in the vacant homes, the SEI upgrades, and anywhere that there is some funding to help people along the process.
Well, one thing for sure, that there's certainly going to be no shortage of work out there for you in terms of projects. Let's go back in time. You've been involved in construction for many years. How did it all begin? Where did you get the interest to go down this particular route?
I suppose I was a bit of a serial entrepreneur in the fact that I come from a farming background, and my first business was mushrooms, and then we went and with that, and we had a turkey business. But I went back to college and did a degree in business. So, but always had a love for design, for the figures, for the buildings. So I thought that the construction matched what I do best, and it what I had the most love for and enjoyed the most. So I suppose I started by building my own house, and I got an opportunity then to do a small development, and it went from there. It was about building the team, doing more work, getting better at what we do.
Now, you're from St. Johnston, so initially the work was fairly localised, and you said you started yourself. So then as time went on, you brought on a few people with you?
That's correct, yeah. I suppose I learnt labouring and helping out on the site to start off with. And, yeah, we grew the team, and we worked really hard to get where we are. We probably have about 15 or 16 working to us full-time at the moment, and quite a few more subcontractors coming in to work along with us. At this stage, it's about managing the process, looking after our customers. Our best client is a repeat customer, because they understand what we're about, and a lot of them come back because of our staff, and they ask for the same guy to come out and do the job for them. And I think that's the key, that you look after your customer base and add value to them, and maybe the people that we did work with 4 or 5 years ago are coming back. They may have bought a property that they want to do an upgrade in to avail of some of the grants, or they unfortunately may have to do build the adaption in their house. But that's life, and that's the way it goes on. And we've always been there to try and look after people. And key to our business has always been the costing of the project, that we try to align their budget with the costing we did, so that at the end of the day, they weren't felt that they weren't being overcharged or being pushed to do or buy something that wasn't within their budget. So at the end of the day, we would have got paid, and they would have got paid, and they would have had a very good product afterwards.
You mentioned there about staff and people maybe mentioning particular staff, and they want to come back, and that brings in, and this applies to many businesses, and sometimes it's a challenge, is even the retention of staff. I mean, you have good staff, you need to look after them, and there's also competing industries out there, and having the key people in the right places is so crucial.
Oh, there's certainly competing industries, and I think after COVID, people found it a lot more difficult to retain staff, but your good staff is the key to your business, and you have to look after them, and you have to pay them well, and the only way to do that is actually work in the more profitable areas. There's a lot of competition out there. There's a lot of competition in construction at the moment as well. So, staff retention is key to all businesses. And we also like to develop and grow our staff numbers. We're constantly recruiting. And one of the helps in that aspect has been the apprenticeship programs, where we've had a number of our employees go through apprenticeship programs, and we also like to provide training for them as well, and a lot of our aspects if they want to avail of it. So it gives them that they can develop as a person when working for it as well, that they don't feel that they're boxed in or constrained to doing one particular thing.
And on that point, I know there's been a bit of a shift in recent years, but is there enough national government policy going down that apprenticeship road? Because it seems a few years back, everybody was going towards the academic route and into college, and maybe a fear that there wasn't enough people in trades.
To be blunt, definitely not. I would think that, there's not enough of the right people being pushed into construction. And if we think about over the next 20 years, it's going to be every bit as profitable and enjoyable an industry to work in as the tech industry was perceived to be in the last 20 years. I mean, AI is going to have a massive game changer in a lot of industries, but in construction, we'll still need the electricians, we'll still need the plumbers, we'll still need the builders. They aren't replaceable the same as, okay, you have tech coming in like modular builds, and you have maybe all along that way, but you still need people on site. So there has to be encouragement to train up our youth and more apprenticeship programs, more of them out in TY, and see how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you've been involved in the whole construction business for several decades, but if we go back to your early years, I'm sure if you compare then with now, regulations were a lot looser, there wasn't the same quality control, there wasn't the same standards. There's been a huge amount of changes, I take, over the time.
Well, I'm involved, a number of years. And I suppose the key now is energy efficiency. And that wouldn't have been talked about as much back 30 years ago. It was how big your house was. Now it's not what it costs to build it. It's how easy it is to run it. And that's what's driving, and rightly so, that's what's driving the builds now. The proper planning, the proper insulation, the proper air tightness, using heat pumps are going to give huge energy savings over the... and you should be thinking about your house, how it's going to be in 20, 30, 40 years' time. Not just a short-term gain off of the... You can't just replace the fabric. You can replace the fridge, the freezer, the cooker, but you can't replace the insulation and the floors and the loft and the walls as easy. So it's better to do it once and do it right.
Yeah. We hear a lot at the moment about the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland, the SEAI, and recently there was some new grants announced, and there is certainly a helping hand there for a lot of people, but still maybe is there a, would you feel more can be done at the state level because still people have to finance a certain amount themselves?
Well, I suppose the more money that's made available, the better for anyone in the construction industry, but it shouldn't be seen as just an add-on to the price. That people should generally get value from these grants, the window grants, the door grants, insulation, all very good grants. And they've only just come out there. And then there's other ones like, which would be fantastic for towns now, like the new one that came out last week, the over-the-shop grant, which I think is maybe 125,000 made available to turn some of these old derelict buildings in towns that the bottom floor can be back to commercial, and the top floor can be made into living. So a lot of the accommodation is probably there in structure, but not finished out by having apartments and houses in it. So, I think a lot of the money should be put into revitalising towns. We can only look at all our local towns and see that they definitely need that money spent on them.
And this could hopefully in the long term revitalise the centres of our towns, because it's not a case that we've a shortage of accommodation. If I think there's parts of Donegal, maybe 20% vacancy in some towns. So this can be a negative that's turned into a positive.
Absolutely. And that would really revitalise a lot of stuff and create a lot of work. Very simple, the create a lot of work in the towns and make them more attractive as well.
So in the short and medium term, the construction sector, there are so many potential projects out there. There's going to be plenty of work.
Yeah, and we haven't touched the area of the defective lock crisis in the county, which is going to take years to fix and rectify. And we're only now just looking at the people who are unfortunate enough to have it in their homes. We haven't looked at the holiday homes. We haven't looked at the public buildings. We haven't looked at the schools. So, I mean, the infrastructure, the roads, the bridges, so there's an awful lot of work there and an awful lot of head scratching to how we're going to solve these problems. But at least we've made a start.
Yeah. And are we going to have to bring more people in rather than people leaving Donegal? Will there be a shortage, do you think, in terms of skills for some of these opportunities?
Oh, there's a massive shortage in labour, but it's great to see the vans maybe not going to Dublin anymore, that they're able to find the work in Donegal and earn an income in such a beautiful county that we have here. And there will be people come to Donegal, no doubt about that. And that's good. That'll be, have a knock-on effect for local shops, restaurants, suppliers. I'll have a positive spin for them as well.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, years ago when people were buying a house, there wasn't too much talk other than maybe lagging the jacket and a little bit of loft insulation. But now the word really, I suppose, and we've got the current energy crisis, so more than ever, people really are beginning to think about their home and the heating and the efficiencies. And we only have to look around. Solar panels were rare. Now they're becoming pretty common. And there's the shape and everybody's house is going to be going forward quite different to what was there 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, it was always old saying a good builder saves you money and a bad builder costs you a fortune. And no more so with energy efficiency now. And even down to air tightness, it's a whole, you can't really have it unless you do everything correctly, and it has to be insulated correctly. Air tightness, mechanical ventilation, the proper amount of insulation in the attics, the proper heat pump design for the house, the solar panels, it's the whole package together. But the package together can be really effective. Yeah. And yeah, with the price of oil now, it's come to, it's on everybody's lips. And yeah, it's a good business, a good time for anyone in that sector.
And for people with older houses, adapting and bringing in some of the modern things, it's not always possible, so you need to look at places individually if they're of a certain age.
Yeah, well, it's a case-by-case study. Probably the first thing anyone does get a BER assessment or get an energy audit on their house, and they can sort of, from that there, they can identify what areas are weak and what areas can be improved. And it mightn't take, an awful lot of adjustments to solve the problem, to move them up a couple of grades in the and the energy spectrum from even a D to a B will save them a lot of money. I mean, if you're going for your vacant house, your energy upgrades, you really want to bring your house to an A, and that's the whole package with the heat pump. And but the heat pump's only effective if you have the proper windows and the proper insulation there, because it's really it's not the quick blast that you get from oil heating. It's a more a slower process, so you don't want to be losing any heat out through any weakness, areas of weakness.
And tell me, you touched on AI. Sometimes maybe people see, it could be a social media post or Instagram something, and there could be this lovely design of this dream home, but the reality may not be the same.
It's not real at all. It's an image, and yeah, we get it all the time, and Pinterest, AI, Instagram. Mm. And the customer knows so much more now. They're doing so much more research, and that's great. But you just have to be, as a builder, you have to be prepared to do the research yourself as well and embrace change, embrace AI, and use, we use it quite a bit in the industry, and we're probably only using it about a year, but it certainly helps with our costings, and it helps with our design and our workflow and getting back to people quicker, that we can use some messaging and get back. You know, we're all guilty of not answering our emails in time. So now we've programs in place in our customer management, that CRM systems, that we can get back to people and give them the answers that they want. And
these programs that you have in place, did you hear about them, or did you actively go out and search for ways of doing things better, or how have you been able to bring them on stream?
Well, I suppose you look at your industry peers and you look at the people that are doing it better than you, and you try to bounce off them and hear from them. And I've been part of business networks this last 10, 12 years, and part of the Donegal Business Network. And from that, there is, you know, there's people that talk about AI way before I knew anything about it. I was certainly hearing about it from in those meetings, and having proper accounting systems in place and all that. But you have to go out, and teach yourself and move on. It's going from it's being a business leader rather than having the employee mindset.
And here in Donegal, we've a higher than national average of people aged over 65. We're all living longer on average as well. And that presents opportunities and challenges, that as people get older and people want to stay at home, and sometimes they may need to have things adapted. There could be showers, and somebody could have a disability within the house. It's big business, and the council is very much involved in this. There are grants available, and this is something that takes up a lot of your business.
Yeah, well, that's Waterford Pods, that we do that one every week. And I suppose it's for them, it's a repeat the process. So it's a lot of people, it's the bath is the big issue for getting in and out of it. And they probably effectively haven't used a bath in 10 years. And for the carers, they want to be able to shower people. They want a floor that's non-slip, and some grab rails. It's not major rocket science, and it can be done within a week. Maybe they need the doors widened for a chair, and they need a ramp at the front door. So there are very good grants available for that. And it makes a difference. It means that people can stay living in their home for those 2 or 3 years extra, rather than going into a nursing home. And the carers that come in to work with them, that they have comfort, that they can actually shower them, move them about, help their mobility without really infringing on their dignity, for want of a better word.
And I'm sure there's cases that you've maybe consulted with somebody or gone into a house, and they mightn't have thought of how to find the solution, but from your experience, you could say, well, do X, Y, and Z, and this is how you get around it.
Well, you know, all situations are different, and you have to, you know, you have a common ground of what's acceptable for a grant payment. But, I mean, there's other things we do, like the stair lifts and the ramps. And, yeah, it's about finding a way, finding a solution that everybody's happy with. And, yeah, well, generally we find that thing is solution-driven more than anything else. design doesn't or finish isn't the most important. It's about finding something that's practical and solves a problem.
You're listening to Business Matters on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore, and I'm speaking with Bert Galbraith of Galbraith Construction, based in St. Johnstone. What about the rising cost of construction and young people and people saying, you know, that maybe they've given up the hope of ever owning their own house? From a construction point of view, and, you know, what would you like to see the government do to help keep a lid on costs? Now, I know we're saying this at a time when we really don't know what way oil prices are going to go, and that filters down through to pretty much everything. But things like VAT and things like that, is there much wriggle room there, do you think?
Well, new builds in Northern Ireland have zero VAT on them. So, I mean, there's a starting one I'll throw out there. Yeah, it's become crazy, the price of building a house. It just keeps going up and going up and going up, and there doesn't seem to be anything that comes back. And here today, we're on the day that there's protests and fuel protests, and rightly so. And the cost all filters back to the, unfortunately, to the young couple starting off, that it's probably twice what it was 6-7 years ago, which is a huge difference. And they talk about, we are definitely going to have to build smaller houses and think more about the design of them, because every meter has to be paid for. And it's unfortunate, and it's very, very worrying that there will be a generation that won't be able to afford to buy a house on their own. And we can even see it in the construction in Donegal, that all the builds are social housing driven. There's maybe only one or two that are actually for the private sector. And that's totally because there is no market out there, that people can't afford to buy that house in the private sector anymore. So that has to be looked at as well. But, I mean, I haven't got all the solutions to that.
Bert, if we look at any town and older houses, of course, chimneys were everywhere. New builds now, you don't see a chimney. That's one of the big changes, and the whole heating is such an important part. So as you had said there, that when you're looking at the cost of a prop and building it, the energy cost long term and what it's going to cost you each year, you have to factor that in. Is that something that you sit down and talk to people about when they're looking at their dream home of the future?
Yeah, definitely have to look at the energy costs. I suppose, I mean, there's a lot of factors in it. It's the energy costs. Now we've all been driven towards heat pumps, and or be it the air-to-water one or the deep-bore one. So both of them are very good systems. But they only work as good as the insulation and the fabric and the air tightness and the windows and everything else. That combined with that and the ventilation and heat recovery. So it's one massive package together that drives down the costs. I suppose also you have to look at solar panels. A lot more people have electric cars, so are they enhancing some to heat the water, but also to generate electricity? Are they going to sell the electricity back to the grid, or are they going to put batteries in and have it there to charge your car? So, yeah, your house now is really become an energy centre, and how you manage the energy rather than lose it, how you can harness everything that's available. And no doubt we will see many more solar panels in years to come. Solar panels are going to replace the chimneys, without a doubt.
And maybe one of the downsides, and we've seen it already when we've had a number of storms, people becoming very dependent on electricity, and then if we actually have power cuts, sometimes there isn't a backup there. And this is maybe a conversation that didn't happen a few years ago.
Yeah, we said that was a massive problem when houses had heat pumps and no plan B. So and there will be more storms, no doubt about that, and there will be more, and the energy system has been challenged more and more. So the only thing is your house has to be better insulated, that it doesn't lose the heat that quickly, but that's not really a great solution. You need to have backup plans I suppose batteries is probably the only backup plan you can have, that you have some way of harnessing that energy, and you have basically maybe a day or two's energy that you can draw down. So, but then batteries are new, and there's not a lot of people have, but they will get better.
Yeah, and like everything else, they will evolve. What about construction materials, be it concrete, timber, steel? Have we seen a lot of changes over the years in sort of the core of a house?
I suppose Donegal was always traditionally a block-built house, but that's changed massively. A lot of the public sector housing at the moment, nearly all of it is timber frame with a block outside. But you will see more of the ICFs coming in, which is with the concrete pour and some of the cladding. So there were, and then if we go to SIPs and modular homes, again, that's another. Yeah, so there's many more construction types coming on board that wouldn't have been there 10 years, 20 years ago. But I suppose with the defective block crisis, everybody is looking at an alternative to block, to concrete. And concrete is a very, in this county, and cement is a very difficult product to work with the climate. So it's not easy being a block layer for 3-4 months of the year. So if they can find a better product to do it quicker, to do it more efficiently, then yeah, that has to be considered.
And we hear a lot about, particularly infrastructural projects, about the planning system and delays. From your point of view as a builder, is there an awful lot of paperwork that you get bogged down with because of just the nature of bureaucracy?
Yeah, there's an awful lot of paperwork out there, but maybe there has to be a lot of paperwork out there because compliance is so important. And you're working with other people's money, so you have to be able to do the checks and make sure everything. You better to do it once and do it right. There's a lot of health and safety, but I wouldn't say that's very important. We have to ensure that when our workers go to work in the morning, that they come back home safe in the evening. So between health and safety, compliance, I fully agree with that. Like, the more paperwork, the more compliance is out there, and employees that they're well looked after as well, that they're all, and their pension schemes, that they're all got their insurances, that they've all got the statutory, whatever they're due. That's important because there was a lot of rogues in construction, and that's one way to keep them out of it, to keep the black market out of it. And that's only fair for the people that are doing it right. So a lot of the grants and the schemes and everything, the contractor or the person doing the work will have to be tax compliant. So that means that, yeah, you're going to employ the legit person as opposed to the one that's doing the double.
And tell me, after COVID, a lot of smaller operations in construction folded. Have people come back into the construction sector?
Oh, yeah, there's an awful lot of people come back. And that's great. We embrace people coming back into it. We need new entrants. We need old people coming back into it again that we're doing something else, because there's an awful lot of houses in Donegal to be rebuilt and demolished and everything else within the whole building programme. There's an awful lot of work to be done. So we need them all and training up. And people that have come to live in this county as well, that we can get them trained up as well, that they can see, that they can get a job and see a future and work in our industry as well.
Tell me just something I was thinking about, again, changing trends. Roofing. Years ago, it might have been banger slate, and then we had concrete tiles, and there's different types of tiles and roofing. Is there a sort of preferred best roof out there at the moment?
Yeah, we're doing council houses this week, and it's the fibre cement slate that's going on them. There's tiles going other ones. So it's still maybe less of the banger blues, probably driven by the price of them now at this stage. But yeah, it's still the fibre cement, and it's still the, it hasn't changed as much as anything else now. There's people been going for the insulated slabs and that sort of stuff, and the more modern look. But yeah, generally, if you look around most houses, it's still slate and tile.
And away from construction and work, when you're winding down, sport is a big thing for you, and you're a big rugby man.
Yeah, well, I'm a big rugby follower, and we, everyone has to have some way of going mad, so mine's is the rugby. So yeah, I've been, I'm chairman of Strabane Rugby Club his last number of years, and also help out run the first team. So, and I'm a big Ireland supporter as well. So we've had a good year on both fronts. So yeah, you have to find something to, and then I also enjoy watching my girls do play their sports, their badminton and their football as well. So yeah, sports are very important. I think it helps you clear the mind. And, yeah, we had a good couple of weeks with our own club. So, happy at the moment.
Happy days. And as you look forward within your own company within the next 3-5 years, do I take it the company is going to continue to expand? You'll be bringing on more people? There's no shortage of work out there.
Listen, if you're standing still, you're going backwards. So yeah, we're constantly recruit. I may not be doing as much myself, but we've got key personnel in the team, and it's about growing them that they can take and run in different areas. And yeah, it's just not thinking that you can do everything yourself, that you learn to delegate. And yeah, we want to be a strong commanding force in construction over the next 5 years, 10 years. And actually, you know, there's a lot of young guys in our team at the moment, and they will only want to get better and then take over some leadership roles as well.
My thanks to Bert Galbraith of Galbraith Construction. After the break, I'll be speaking with the Northern and Western Regional Assembly's economist, John Daly, about the new county data dashboard that has been launched for 8 counties in the region.
Business Matters is brought to you by Print Supplies. Based in Frosses, Print Supplies has 21 years experience delivering managed print solutions that save you time and money. With remote monitoring and local hands-on support, they take the hassle out of printers and photocopiers. Email sales@printsupplies.ie to find out more.
Welcome back. The Northern and Western Regional Assembly plays a key role in supporting economic development through planning, EU funding and regional advocacy. Now there's a new online dashboard that will play a vital role in shaping informed decision-making in counties like Donegal. I've been joined on the line by John Daly, who is the Northern and Western Regional Assembly economist. We're going to look in a little bit of detail at the recently launched county data dashboard. Now, it's not just for Donegal, it's for the other, in fact, there's 8 counties in this whole region. John, first of all, maybe let's just explain to people, this essentially is a great new resource. It's a quick way at getting an awful lot of statistics and data about Donegal in a very visually friendly way of looking at things. So explain just the background to it and the need that you felt was there. There was a little bit of a gap in the market.
Yeah, so first of all, Chris, thanks very much for having us on the show. So the Northern Western Regional Assembly, we've launched this new data initiative called the NWRA's County Data Dashboards. The NWRA is just the acronym for the Northern and Western Regional Assembly. And the County Data Dashboards are effectively going to provide the general public, stakeholders and policymakers with up-to-date data on the 8 counties of the Northern Western Region of Ireland. So as you touched on there, that would include Donegal, but it also includes Cavan, Monaghan, Leitrim, Sligo, Roscommon, Mayo and Galway. So there's a dashboard for each of those counties with a series of indicators underneath. So for each county, you're looking at, say, a series of data dashboards that will focus on up-to-date trends regarding, say, population, economic development patterns, housing delivery, the transition to a low-carbon society, and finally, transport, with the data also available at a national level, so you can compare and contrast with how, say, for example, Donegal performs in terms of card spending data versus the national average. So, you, as you touched on as well, look, the development of the county data dashboards, I suppose, stems from the fact that we noticed that there was a lack of up-to-date county data sets that were available to the in the public domain, to our local authorities, to our stakeholders and the general public. And that we noticed as well, they were kind of relying on kind of outdated census data. For example, the last census was as of census 2022, and the census publication from the CSO is extremely useful at the time and in the year or two after. But we're now in 2026, and it's kind of unproductive to be relying on county information that is dated as of since of April 2022. So what we will be doing is we'll be providing these data dashboards, ideally either on a quarterly basis, but for the moment will be on a biannual basis, that will assist users in whether they're, say, monitoring the trends in their county, you know, allows them to kind of identify emerging economic challenges, but also economic opportunities as well. It'll assist people in preparing, say, funding applications, but it also is going to assist, say, for example, in elected representatives from Donegal or stakeholders from Donegal in promoting the county itself. So look, there's a lot in it, and there's a lot of interesting actually trends emerging for Donegal as well, which is very positive to see.
Absolutely. Now, anybody who goes into the dashboard can look at the figures for Donegal and compare with the figures nationally. So be it demographics, we can see how many people are over 65 in the county compared with what the situation is nationally. There's things like the average transaction that's made by individuals. We've got all sorts of things there, and it's going to help formulate maybe future policy as well in terms of housing. There's figures there. We can relate them again between Donegal and looking at even things like the low carbon society dashboard. What percentage of cars, of new car sales, are EVs? And it's giving you a great overall picture.
Yeah, so some of the positives that stand out in terms of Donegal, look, you can see it there from the opening demographics dashboard for Donegal, estimated population of just over 180,000 persons as of April 2025. That's up 0.6%, albeit it is lower than the national growth rate of 1.5%. What is encouraging to see, though, is that Donegal's share of Ireland's population is maintained at 3.3%. Which is very good to see. But as you said, the data dashboard actually breaks it down by age, between young persons, working age population, and elderly population. And we see the elderly population is actually up 3.2% in Donegal compared to, say, a national increase of 3.3%. So it's actually relatively lower, which is actually, in that sense, is kind of positive in the sense of it's lower than the national average, but nevertheless it reflects the aging population we have. But other kind of, I suppose, standout trends, Chris, in terms of what I would have presented at a recent event at the Letterkenny Chamber of Commerce, is very positive for the local economy, is that there was just over 1.4 billion euros in domestic card expenditures that took place in Donegal in the 12 months to January 2026. Now, that represents growth of about 10.6% versus a national average of 10.8%. And while we are below the national average, you know, we are one of the top performing counties in Ireland, which is very positive to see, particularly considering the economic challenges that have been associated with Donegal in recent years and the wider region. But what's also interesting, Chris, you see while a wider societal kind of factors kind of appearing in the dashboard. So, for example, the value of cash withdrawals, that's down 0.2%, about 434 million euros. That means the number of, or the value of cash that was taken out in ATMs and in cashback in Donegal was at 434 million. That's down 0.2% from the previous year. But what you're seeing when you look at the other counties is that you're seeing cash withdrawals are consistently declining, whereas the value of card expenditures, so debit or credit card expenditures, and even online transaction is rising notably. One of the other kind of, I suppose, positive standouts was that the employment in state agencies in Donegal was up 4.8% in 2025 to just over 12,000. And that kind of goes to show the value of the work that's been doing from representatives in Donegal in terms of the IDA, in terms of Enterprise Ireland, but also in terms of, I suppose, Utras as well. And but I suppose, like the rest of the country and particularly in the region, I suppose one of the biggest challenges in Donegal is housing. Unfortunately, we are seeing greater rent inflation in Donegal, albeit it is relatively low at 994 euro on average per month as of Q3 2025, which is relatively low in comparison to national norms. It's still up 10-odd%, which is quite high. And likewise, median house prices in Donegal as of January 2026 they were up 9.9% to just over €227,000. Now, while inflation is up in that regard, house price inflation is up in that regard, the median house price to earnings ratio for a couple in Donegal is still 2.4. So anything below 4, for your listeners' context, anything below 4 in that ratio means that house prices are still relatively affordable when you compare house prices relative to the earnings of a couple on the median earnings in Donegal. But nevertheless, anyway, it just goes to show there needs to be more progress made in delivering greater levels of housing, albeit we see new dwelling completions are up 8.5%. But there's such a wide range of data sets in this. So, for example, many of your listeners probably wouldn't be aware of the Revenue Commission data on the level of taxes that are generated in Donegal. Like €221 million, for example, in VAT receipts were generated in Donegal, which is up 22.1%. That just goes to show the strength of the, I suppose, spending in Donegal that I kind of highlighted earlier, but also the shows kind of makes the case for kind of the county that they're paying its way in terms of revenue generated, whether it be income tax, TAYE and USC, that's, for example, €287 million. Corporation tax and capital gain tax receipts, Donegal generates around €124 million. It goes to show, you know, if it, the fact that we have these figures now that are now in the public domain that weren't previously, because it's very hard to get those statistics from the Revenue Commission's website, you know, improves the ability of policymakers to advocate for the likes, for example, the Donegal 10T road network, the delivery of the ATU's library IT education building. And it kind of improves the ability, I suppose, of our policymakers to advocate greater levels of infrastructure delivery, but also economic development in the county as well, which is needed considering the context of the reclassification of the region and the implications of that.
Now, as I say, it's hugely impressive when you're looking at it. So if people want to get a chance to look at this themselves, John, just how do they go about it? What's the website address that will provide you with the link to get into the dashboard?
Yeah, so you can actually access it on the Northern Western Regional Assembly's website. So if you just type into Google nwra.ie and then you go to the Planning and Economic Development tab, and you'll see policy and research publications. But you can also get it in by simply putting into Google NWRA policy and research publication. And once you go into that, you have all the dashboards right in front of you. You can download. The first one you'll see is Cavan, and then the next one there is Donegal, and you can make your way down. And you can then compare and contrast how each county is getting on against one another. But also in each dashboard, as well, as I said, there is national statistics as well. So compare Donegal versus the national average in whatever statistic you're looking at. So look, and as you said, the idea of it is to make it accessible, to make it digestible, and allow anyone, whether it be the general public or someone involved in stakeholder policy advocacy, to pick this up very quickly, not have to read through 20-odd pages, and just glide through the information very quickly and gather your thoughts in order to advocate for greater levels of economic development, whether it be in Donegal or the wider region.
So overall, John, when you look at the Donegal figures, I suppose a little bit of a mixed bag, many things very positive, some areas we could do better on. Just finally, just remind us that the Northern and Western Regional Assembly, it was established back in 2015. Primarily, what are its main roles and its whole reason for being?
Yeah, so the Northern and Western Regional Assembly is one of the three regional assemblies in Ireland. So regional assemblies sit between central government and local government. As public bodies, you know, our remit is to support the delivery of balanced regional development in Ireland in line with government policies. In our case of the Northern Western Regional Assembly, our focus is on the 8 counties that I previously would have spoken of. And in this regard, our key responsibilities are, I suppose, threefold, really. So I suppose, firstly, involved in planning and developing the regional, spatial and economic strategy of the Northern Western Region of Ireland, which is sets the population targets for the key urban centres of the region, but also aims to deliver regional policy objectives for the region and forms part of Project Ireland 2040 and the National Planning Framework. Secondly, we're involved in EU funding, and specifically in this regard, we act as the European Regional Development Fund Managing Authority, supporting the delivery of just over €200 million in investment in co-financed projects across the region, as well as other individual EU projects. And lastly, Chris, and this kind of brings me to you today, we're involved in advocacy, we're involved in research, and we're involved in working with our elected representatives, because we have a total of 30 elected representatives, just under 30 elected representatives that sit on the Assembly. And they are involved across the 9 local authorities. They are nominated be the 9 local authorities, 8 counties in total, and that's effectively the kind of overarching remit of the Assembly.
And that was John Daly, economist with the Northern and Western Regional Assembly. You've been listening to Business Matters with me, Chris Ashmore. If you wish to contact the programme, you can email me at businessmatters@highlandradio.com. Can I conclude by wishing you a healthy, happy and profitable week ahead? Until the next time, goodbye.
Business Matters is brought to you by Print Supplies. Based in Frosses, Print Supplies has 21 years experience delivering managed print solutions that save you time and money. With remote monitoring and local hands-on support, they take the hassle out of printers and photocopiers. Email sales@printsupplies.ie to find out more.